Today is July 7th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
Now, this may come as a surprise to some folks, but this week the iPhone continues to dominate the news. We'll be looking at some of the developments in the iPhone market since the device's release and looking at the broader picture in this week's Context Machine.
We'll start, though, with a quick summary of the week's iPhone news. Most of the stories this week were an attempt to come off the iPhone release high, but the bottom line was pretty simple. Apple sold a big old pile of the product, positive reviews percolated from around the country, and Apple's stock rose. By week's end, the iPhone was pretty much sold out.
Now, Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster estimated that Apple managed to sell about 500,000 iPods, which is above his original estimate of about 200,000. Now, we've seen sales estimates as high as 700,000 units also. Apple hasn't said how much product they stockpiled for the release, so we'll probably have to wait until Apple's July earnings report for any signal on how much they've actually sold.
We have yet to see a fundamentally negative review of the iPhone, and between the sales and the positive reaction, Apple stock has notched upwards to close the week at 132.30. That's a record high. Now, it actually closed a little bit lower on Friday from Thursday, but it basically ended the week for a week's record high. For those keeping score, that puts Apple's P/E ratio at around 41.7, and that compares with Google's, which is at 48, and Dell's, which is at about 25. It also puts Apple's market cap at about $114 billion. Recall that about a month ago, Apple's P/E ratio was 32. Now, we should note that much of Apple's value currently is based on anticipated iPhone revenues, and that the company's official P/E ratio won't account for any of those revenues until Apple reports its earnings for the June quarter. As the June quarter only included a day and a half of iPhone sales, it will be another 3 months before we really see even the beginning of an effect on the company's stock in terms of actual value versus anticipated value.
And AT&T this week agreed to purchase the Oklahoma-based cell carrier Dobson for $2.8 billion, that's U.S. dollars. Dobson currently serves the rural Midwest, Southwest, and Alaska, so the deal will expand AT&T's primary coverage areas.
The deal means that Apple's popular combination of iPod and smartphone may eventually be available in regions that historically have been roaming areas for AT&T customers. It also means that AT&T should be able to save about $2.5 billion in roaming expenses and overhead costs. AT&T is awaiting final regulatory approval, which should come before the end of 2007.
And with that, let's get into the Context Machine and take a broader look at the iPhone.
Well, Jeff, we've got a week of the iPhone under our belts. At least I've got a week. You've got several days.
Yes, that's true. And it's been an interesting week so far, I think.
It has been. Now, I still love my iPhone. I love it. I just love the thing. Maybe I'm obsessing over it a little bit. Now, I do, however, have a couple of little gripes that I've discovered after using it for several days, gripes that I didn't cover in the written review and gripes that we didn't cover in our iPhone special report that we did last week. So, first of all, I have encountered a fascinating little problem where the iPhone wants to constantly shift my audio source from the iPhone itself, i.e. I'm holding it up to my ear like a normal cell phone, over to the Bluetooth headset that I have paired up. Now, that can only happen when the Bluetooth headset is in range and turned on, but I discovered this problem when I couldn't find the darn thing. It turned out it was my pants pocket, go figure. But the iPhone kept switching over to my jawbone despite the fact that I told it to speak through the iPhone, and the iPhone is not supposed to do that. Now, I have continued to not use my jawbone despite the fact that I so far love that device in order to make sure that this is an actual problem before we write about it, but I definitely thought it bore mentioning here. Today, I was talking on the phone to Dave Hamilton, our president at the Mac Observer, and during our our 45-minute phone call, four separate times my iPhone switched back to the Jawbone that was about 40 feet away, and maybe 30 feet away, whatever. It was really, really, really annoying and frustrating.
Okay, but on the bright side, you had good coverage distance between the headset and the phone.
Yes, that would in fact be the upside to this, is that its Bluetooth signal apparently is strong. However, the iPhone needs to stick with whatever choice it is that we give it. Now, I don't yet know if this is some sort of weird situation that's particular to me, and it's certainly the kind of thing that most people aren't going to encounter, because if they've got their Bluetooth headset on, they're probably going to want to be using it. But it nonetheless is a problem as far as I'm concerned. Now, I also had a little gripe about the fact that – not a little gripe, but I think that it would be a good feature for Apple to add if all of the other applications that are on the iPhone will go into landscape mode when you go typing, if you turn it to be horizontal. Now, the browser does this just fine. You pull up the browser, you're holding the iPhone upright, and you can type on the little keyboard and look at the pages longer than they are wide. But if you turn the iPhone on its side, it goes into landscape mode, the keyboard expands, and the whole thing becomes, in my opinion, a little bit easier to type. Now, that's fantastic. But the same thing needs to happen, I think, when you go to notes or when you go to typing an email or anything like that. It all needs to switch over into landscape mode. On the positive side, I found myself obsessed with watching the weather. Part of that's because it's been hot here in the Bay Area. But the other part of it is because I have handy access to it. And so I'm like constantly wondering what the temperature is. Whether or not that's a good thing is another issue. And then the last thing I have after a week of using this thing is the fact that I have found that every night, rather than reading my book or reading a magazine before I go to sleep, I've been catching up on Google News with my iPhone, because it's just right there. And I'm an information junkie, and I kind of love having that stuff right at my fingertips.
You know, you're not the first person I've heard say that. And I've talked with people that they take their iPhone to bed with them so they can do their end-of-the-day things. And I know people that like to go through their email so that they can just make sure that they're caught up for the day before they go to sleep. But the whole news thing, just wanting to keep up on what's going on, being an information junkie, yeah, I feel your pain. And and when I'm living with an iPhone too, I'm certain that I will probably be doing exactly the same thing.
Well, I noticed also, my wife and I went to go see Ratatouille last night. And before the movie started, I started pulling up Google News, and my wife looked at me and said, "Don't you want to talk to me?" It's like, yeah.
Yeah, get an iPhone and we'll SMS each other.
Well, we did exchange notes about the people that were in front of us by typing on the iPhone, but that's another issue.
Okay, that's actually a nice closet feature. A lot of people probably haven't thought of. Use the iPhone as a device to talk about people behind their backs.
Quite
literally behind their backs.
But quite literally behind their backs. Now, Jeff, I understand that you dug into the manual for us. So what did you find?
Well, the first thing I found was that the manual's not in the box. What's up with that?
Go figure.
Yes. And for some reason, I had it in my head in the beginning that the whole manual, it's like a 147-page manual, was actually included in the packaging. It's not. You get this nice little fold-out card that has a bunch of the fingertips that Apple also has on their website as movies. And then there's also a little pamphlet that has specs about the iPhone. That's it.
Right.
I was surprised with that. Now, the manual itself is a free download from Apple's website. So, of course, I did. It's in PDF format, so you need Preview or Adobe Acrobat Reader to read the manual. And I did find a few things in there that I was kind of surprised at, one of which is that the calendar is a little bit more limited than I thought it would be. I was surprised to find that you actually can't sync categories between the iPhone and iCal.
Now, that seems like it would be kind of a no-brainer for a feature to be there.
Yes, and that's something that I had been doing for quite a while with my Palm, And I remember doing that back in the OS 9 days when I was using what at the time was called Kronos Group Organizer. It would synchronize all the categories to my Palm PDA for me. And I'm really surprised that this isn't a feature that's on the iPhone right now. Now, on the other hand, if you use a Palm PDA or other similar device and use Apple's iSync application, it is, in my opinion, a weak conduit because it doesn't sync categories there either. So maybe this is a feature that Apple plans to add down the road.
You would think with a device that has such a beautiful and gorgeous display, where iCal works so very well, because I do think that iCal is, while it needs improvement on the iPhone, is a great application. You would think that the categories would be just kind of an obvious thing because they can be a great visual indicator, depending on how you use them, for what kind of event that you have scheduled.
Sure. And now, like in my case, I use iCal extensively, which is saying a lot because I would consider myself a power user when it comes to calendar and contact applications. And I'm relying on iCal every day. I have lots of different calendars in iCal, and they're all color-coded so that I can just look at a week, look at a month, or look at a day, and at a glance, I know what I'm doing. I might not know what a specific event is, but I know what I'm doing. So I know time that's blocked out for Mac Observer. I know time that's blocked out for lunch, whatever. It doesn't matter. Everything is color-coded, and it's easy for me to see what it is.
And you don't have extreme that organism.
iPhone. Yeah, I have this organizing disease.
Yeah, definitely organized. Got it color-coded. Definitely color-coded.
Yeah. You know, sadly for me, going to places like the Container Store and the Organizer Store are really cool events.
Fair enough. And while I actually envy that as much as I'm having fun with you, what else did you find in the manual?
Okay. I also found one thing that I thought was a little bit interesting, which probably isn't interesting at all if I were to go and read in-depth other cell phone manuals. The iPhone actually changes its output, radio signal output, depending on how close or how far away it is from a cell tower, which is a nice way to help conserve battery power. So as you get closer,
that
it doesn't have to output
brilliant.
As much energy.
I did not know that, and that is very, very cool.
Yeah, I thought that was a really nice feature. And it's one of those things that unless you go digging way deep into all of this, you're not going to see it.
So absolutely. So, anything else?
I also liked how the iPhone prioritizes its wireless connections, meaning
yes.
that it will always go for a Wi-Fi network first and then fall back to Edge if that's the only option that's available.
And yes, that is fantastic.
I thought that was really nice, especially considering that Edge tends to be slower, and for some people, dramatically slower. So having everything default to a faster data network, definitely a good move on Apple's part.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Anything else?
You know, I'm still annoyed that there's not a to-do list built in. And I even
gotta have that
to
do list and gotta have those left handed preferences. I think that all these features will come.
I agree.
And now, even though I do have the couple of bones that I mentioned, and Jeff has found a couple of things to tweak as well, use this thing for a week. It's fantastic. I love making phone calls from it. I love managing my recent calls from it. I love the favorites. I just love making phone calls. I love the visual voicemail. You know, I love surfing from this phone. This is a great device. I love it.
You know, and yes, I've been bagging on certain features on the iPhone, but I have to admit that I'm iPhone obsessed as well right now. I think it's an insanely amazing product.
Yeah, well, it's pretty telling that when people have complaints about it, it tends to be very niche complaints, very like, well, there's this one thing that the iPhone could do better, or there's this one feature that it needs. You look at across the board, and this is a great segue to our next section of the Context Machine, but you look across the board at the reviews that have come through, as a broad experience, people have been heaping praise on this thing.
They have. They have. So even though I've been bagging on certain things, I'm really looking forward to the day when I retire my Razor, I retire my Palm, and I move on to just an iPhone.
Yep. Well, I've already done that, but I'm not as tied to my organizer and calendar as you are, as much as I would like to be. So let's actually then skip on. We thought we'd take a look at some of the third-party reviews and opinions that have been out there, and sort of bring together the things that they've been dissing or saying is good.
Right, and by and large, the reviews are positive, and even very the positive. Negative things in the reviews they're minor, just like what we've been discussing, little things that can be fixed with software updates.
Well, and of course, the biggest number one complaint, I think, from every single reviewer that I've read is that there's no voice dialing.
Yes. Yes, I'll agree with that. No voice dialing. I've seen that show up a lot of places. The next complaint that I see a lot is that Edge sucks and it's too slow.
Yeah. Yeah, Edge is basically a big pile of crap. It's nice to have. It's better than a poking at the sharp stick. But sometimes, actually, I found myself looking around for a sharp stick.
Wow. All right. Well, I'm sorry. I just got the visual and it was completely inappropriate. Another thing that comes up in a lot of the reviews, and this is something that I'm disagreeing with, even not having an iPhone, people are complaining about the keyboard.
Yeah, some people, it's been a very mixed thing. Some people say the keyboard's great. Some people are saying that it's been kind of hard to figure out. You know, Andy Notko basically said, phooey, all the people that are complaining. You summed it up nicely when we were talking about this.
Sure. Yeah, what Andy was saying was that after a couple days of using the keyboard on his iPhone, he was typing substantially faster and more accurately than he did after 2 years of using his whatever his smartphone was before. I think it was a Windows CE device.
Yeah, and I've taken to the keyboard very, very fast, and I found that the more I trust it to correct my few mistakes, the faster I get. I've been very, very impressed with the keyboard. I think it's a great implementation and that Apple gets major kudos for having made this thing work.
You know, I've used the keyboard probably about 15 minutes total since the iPhone's been available. And after a few minutes, I was proficiently one finger typing.
Sure.
And I have a feeling that if people learn to trust the keyboard, that's going to be the big thing. I think there's a lot of people that don't trust the keyboard. Once they get over that, then it'll be a much better experience for them.
Yeah, absolutely. The feature where Apple, the algorithm that they're using to figure out that not that just you had a typo, but that, to use their example, that O-U-Z-Z-A is probably P-I-Z-Z-A, that whatever they're doing there is just, it's almost magical.
Yeah, I think magic is an appropriate word to use. Now, as far as durability goes, since I don't have one in my hand yet, I can't speak on this other than saying I've seen articles and videos where the iPhone is going through a lot of abuse and it's holding up really well. What's your experience been so far?
Well, so far, my personal experience with the iPhone is that it does hold, it just holds up great. The iPhone does collect a lot of fingerprints. It collects a lot of body grease, but the chamois that they sent include with it is quite good at actually keeping that clean, and that's the case with any phone that you're holding up to your face. We saw PC Magazine. They did a great video where they put the iPhone in a bag with keys and shook it. No scratches.
Yes.
They took those keys and they actually rubbed on the outside of the plastic bag. So they're rubbing the keys on the face. No scratches. And then They took the key and they scraped on it. No scratches.
And I've never seen a phone hold up like that.
No, not, or any kind of device like this. And they also did some drop tests. They dropped it on carpet, they dropped it on tile, and they dropped it on concrete. The darn thing kept working.
And not only did they drop it on concrete, they dropped it on concrete several times.
Several times, that's right. So what did David Pogue say about it?
David Pogue, as I recall, was carrying his iPhone around in his pocket with his keys for a week.
On purpose.
No scratches. On purpose. No scratches.
And of course, he also did a musical about buying the iPhone, but that's another story.
That's another story. But we'll put the link in the show notes for everyone so they can go and experience David's musical prowess.
Yes. The other comments that I've talked about, actually, most people really haven't looked at the durability issue. I think that PC Magazine has done the best job so far of testing this thing, and it seems to hold up. My personal experience is that the darn thing is holding up. I had someone drop it on the counter. I was showing it to someone at the restaurant, that one of our favorite restaurants, and the manager of the restaurant and is friends with my wife and myself, and friends with me and my wife. And he's looking at it, and he just drops the thing on the counter, and it's like apologizing left and right. It wasn't hurt. Wasn't even hurt a little bit. Not that I recommend dropping it, but.
No.
But Apple seems to have made this thing pretty darn well.
Now, one thing that I heard a day or two ago talking with a friend was that they would really like to see someone come out with a case for the iPhone that has a pocket on the back for the chamois cloth so that they can they can clean off the surface and be able to carry the chamois cloth all the time too.
Well, I think that we're going to see that happen. As a matter of fact, I think that we're going to see products that have their own built-in cleaner. And like Motorola has this great little pad that they include with a razor. Did your razor come with one of those?
No. What's up with that?
Well, my first one didn't, but my replacement one did. And if you go talk to your AT&T store, they can give you a pile of them. My point, however, is that it's this little pad. You can put it on your keychain if you want, and it just does this great job of cleaning the Razer screen. It does a less good job on the iPhone screen, but that's actually not an issue that I'm prepared to discuss on why. But the point is, I think that we're going to see cases that have pockets for the chamois, cases that have their own built-in chamois, cases that have a built-in pad. I think we're going to see all kinds of things like this being addressed by the marketplace.
So am I correct in assuming that you're not going to carry your Razer around so you can clean your iPhone screen?
No. The pad, actually, if I wanted to carry on the pad, I could put it on my key ring. But I dropped my Razer the second I got home from buying the iPhone.
Jeez, I can't imagine why. So,
go ahead.
My turn? Okay.
So, it's your turn.
Excellent. My experience, the short amount of time that I've had to play with an iPhone wirelessly, Edge was perfectly fine in the Denver and Front Range area for Google Maps, but it seemed pretty pokey when it came to downloading email.
Two things. First of all, I think it was PC World that actually did the video.
Yes.
And it was PC Magazine that wrote the written review, because we're actually talking about AT&T coverage here. In the Bay Area, AT&T rocks. The Edge service here seems to be pretty slow, but their cell phone coverage is fantastic. And you're saying that in Denver, the Denver area, Boulder area, you found it to be really good.
Yeah, it seemed totally reasonable. And the AT&T coverage just for voice calls was better than a lot of the other carriers in the area.
Well, it's interesting, because cell phone coverage is very much a regional issue. Going back to that PC Magazine review, as a matter of fact, they hammered the iPhone for its poor reception and poor voice quality. And my experience is exactly the opposite. I've got better coverage in the exact same areas that the Razer could not hold a phone call. I've got fantastic coverage on my iPhone. I've dropped one call, I think, and I don't think that was on my end in the week that I've been using this device. And voice quality is substantially higher than it was on the Razer, at least for me.
You know, I'll back that up from the phone calls that you've placed to me. When you would call on your Razer, it was a gamble which words I was going to get. But when you've called from the iPhone, it's always clear. And everyone else that's called me from an iPhone, I can tell that they're using a different phone.
Exactly. So I think that when we're looking at these third-party reviews, people that are dinging the iPhone for its reception, that may well be an issue where AT&T is not as set up as well. As a matter of fact, I've heard from many people on the East Coast that say that AT&T does not have good coverage on the East Coast.
Well, good thing that you're on the West Coast.
Well, it's a good thing that I'm on the West Coast, but yes. You know, looking at it from people who are reading reviews, I think that they need to keep that in mind when it comes to the coverage issue. If AT&T stinks in your area, the iPhone's not going to be much better, or maybe not any better than any other AT&T phone. If AT&T is great in your area, you're probably going to love it.
So buyer beware, or buyer. Something like that.
Something like that. Let's move on to the European rumors, eh?
I think that sounds great. All right, so here's what has been trickling out recently, which is that O2 might be the iPhone carrier in the UK.
And if it's not O2, it'll maybe be Vodafone or maybe someone else.
Right. So right now, basically, the rumors are saying, here's some ideas of who we think it might be, but no one really knows.
Well, lots of people are claiming to know, and I think that's a somewhat interesting thing. And
yes.
The consistent story out of Germany seems to be that T-Mobile is going to get the contract. But what I think is really, really interesting here is that Europeans are very, very interested. There is a lot of interest on who is going to get this gig in each of the different markets in Europe.
You know, I think a lot of what it comes down to is it doesn't matter what country you're in. For the most part, the smartphones that are available today suck.
Yes, agreed.
And everyone's really waiting to get their hands on an iPhone everywhere. So one thing that I thought we might see would be phone deals that were basically most of Europe and then a separate one for the UK. But it's starting to look now like it might turn out to be individual carriers for individual countries or for maybe small groups of countries.
Yeah, so much for the European Union. I kid. I love the European Union. But yeah, I actually also thought that we were probably going to see a European-wide contract with someone, and it turns out let me rephrase that. It seems as if that may not be the case, but if you look at it, what's going on right now is that despite such stellar advancements, and I am as dripping with sarcasm as I could be when I say that, stellar advancements such as Music Station, the great way for you to rent music on your cell phone for 20 freaking euros a month, despite such advances beating the iPhone to market, all eyes are on the iPhone in Europe. I would hazard to guess that the iPhone will not be a singularly U.S. Sensation. I think it's going to be popular almost everywhere it goes.
Now, one place that will be interesting to see if it carries the same popularity as it has in the United States, I'm thinking will be places like Japan or possibly Korea, where there's a lot of cell phone technology that we don't see here in the United States.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in Japan and Korea and some of the other more densely populated Asian nations. I mean, you know, the issue with Japan, you get unlimited text messages for years. You've been able to get unlimited text messages for, you know, just a fraction of the price of what you'll pay for a finite number here. Cell phone coverage is, you know, ubiquitous everywhere. And a lot of, large part of that is because of the population density. Japan's roughly the size of California with a population roughly the size of the U.S. So it's a lot more profitable for these carriers to stack cell phone towers everywhere. Whereas in the U.S., we've got a lot of mileage to cover here. And the same yes. thing is true in Europe. Europe tends to be much more densely populated than the United States does per square mile. And so there's been a lot of things that have been happening in Europe that haven't happened in the U.S. yet either.
Yes, yeah, so I'm definitely waiting to see how all of that plays out. I think it'll be interesting. Well, of course it'll be interesting. I mean, look how wild the ride has been here leading up to the iPhone launch, and we're a week out from that happening, or a week past that happening, and it's still all everyone can talk about.
Yep, it is indeed. You know, we looked through the week's news to make sure we were getting everything covered for the show, and it's like iPhone iPhone, Google. Nope, that's still iPhone. It's been an iPhone week.
It has. So, and with that, I think it's probably about time to move on. So if anyone has comments, please feel free to send them to roundup@macobserver.com.
Yes, indeed. Now, before we head out, though, let's do a quick product roundup.
I think that sounds like a great idea. I'll start. Griffin Technology announced on Monday that its PowerJolt car charger for the iPhone is out. The device is based on Griffin's PowerJolt for the iPod, and it's been updated specifically for the iPhone. Users can plug the PowerJolt into the vehicle cigarette lighter, and that's priced at $20.
Yeah, I imagine that'll be probably at least as popular as let me rephrase that. I think that iPhone chargers for the car are going to be probably in pretty good demand, despite the what I think is very good battery longevity for the iPhone.
I agree on that, especially because my iPod battery life is great, yet I still have a charger for my car so that when I'm traveling around, I don't have to drain the battery.
Absolutely. Let's see. Also this week, we had Infinity Data Systems announcing that the SimpleBooks Pro 1.0 was going to be available. They announced that on Thursday. SimpleBooks Pro is an invoice billing and business management application. The software offers payroll capabilities, including tax and benefit calculations. It manages invoices and estimates, can track project time, manages customer and supplier information, tracks inventory, I like to call it, handles data backup, restoration, and more. It's cost $19.95.
And Squarebox Systems announced on Monday that CatDV 6.0 is available. It's a major upgrade to its video logging and media asset software for Mac OS X and Windows. New features include a tree-based navigator, a new film strip view, and a redesigned clip details panel. CatDV costs between $79 and $295, depending on which version you get, and there is a free limited-time trial.
Spacetime Associates announced on Monday a major upgrade to TinyBooks. TinyBooks is an ultra-simple accounting and bookkeeping program designed for home and small businesses. Version 5.0 adds the ability to print estimates as well as invoices. In addition, improvements have been added for descriptions, comments, and sorting. It's priced at $49 for a single-user license.
And finally, this week, our own Bob, Dr. Mac Levitis, reviewed the iPhone.
Indeed he did. He loves it. Gave it 4 out of 5 stars.
So he did. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Apple Weekly Report.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. That's all I've got.
As always, stay subscribed.
Until next week, we'll see you online.